Well, tell you what, we're going to be turning our attention, as I mentioned, to biorefining and wood chemistry in the pulp and paper industry. In recent years, as a range of forces has aligned to enhance clean energy's prospects. We've had some technological progress. We've had, I think, some shifting public opinion about climate change. There's a growing interest by governments in supporting alternative energy technologies, using subsidies, emission caps, and pricing. There's been a massive increase in private investments. And so we've asked a couple of guests to be with us today. Masoud Akhtar is a president of Clean Tech Partners. It's located in Middleton, Wisconsin. It's a private nonprofit organization that commercializes new technologies, and with a goal, I think, to improve competitiveness of Wisconsin's key industry clusters. With us by phone, Ben Thorpe of Richmond, Virginia. He is a clean tech's strategic consultant in the forest products and allied industries area, specializes in energy and biorefineries, and I'm really pleased to have both of them with us today. Certainly, if you have some questions as we move along today, you're more than welcome to join in. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And anywhere else, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments as we move along today. Masoud Akhtar with me in the studio. Thank you very much for being with us again today. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having us, Larry.
And Ben Thorpe from Richmond, Virginia, with us by phone. Ben, hi. Thank you for being there at the phone.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity to participate.
Well, I really appreciate it. And I think, Masoud, let's start out by talking a little bit about clean tech partners a little bit. You've been on the show before. It's been a little while now. I'm trying to remember when. It's been a little bit of a while, but could you talk a little bit about Clean Tech Partners and how it got started? I think it was 4 years ago we first had you on, and that's about time it got started, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was about 2003. Clean Tech Partner, basically, we used to call it Center for Technology Transfer, if you recall last time. Then we changed the name to Clean Tech Partners to better reflect what we do. Clean Tech Partners is basically a nonprofit organization that is funded by the Focus on Energy program, which is a statewide energy efficiency and renewable energy program. And our goal is to help commercialize energy-saving technologies in the state of Wisconsin. And the way we do that is by providing capital either in the form of a loan or equity or a combination of two. Business mentoring is involved in that, and also grant writing assistance sometimes we do to the clients in which we make the investment. And the other thing that we do is once the investment is made, we work very closely with clients, sometimes serving on their board of directors and bringing more partners if needed or any kind of other financial assistance that is required. That's the reason, actually, we call ourselves a clean tech partners. We become partners in the company in which we make the investment.
And Ben Thorpe, what's your role? You're the strategic consultant, and in that capacity, what do you do?
Well, I advise Masoud on these new emerging technologies and try and figure out which locations they will work best in.
And I want to talk a little bit about successes and what you've what's happened so far. I know we want to talk about the pulp and paper industry, but certainly, Masoud, maybe you can talk a little bit about the kinds of investments that you've been involved in.
Yeah. Well, related to the subject today, I would give a couple examples of one of the companies called Thermo Recovery International. That's out of Baltimore, Maryland. They have developed a very neat technology called black liquid gasification. And that's the technology that some of these companies in biorefinery are going to use in the state of Wisconsin.
And black liquor gasification, okay.
Yeah.
And what's the, you know, you can't give us the entire process here, I'm sure, but is there a way to sort of simply tell us what that's about?
Yeah, basically, when you have a chemical process, you're producing black liquor as a byproduct in the chemical processing industry, and people actually use that as a source of energy to run their pulping operations. When they take this black liquid, it goes to a recovery boiler, where they generate 40% of its energy from this for the pulping process and the recovering chemicals.
Oh.
And what these guys have developed, a very unique process where they can gasify the black liquor. Use that for several applications, including the production of synthesis gas, which is a very rich gas in carbon monoxide and hydrogen that people can take the advantage of producing different products out of this.
Well, I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. If you have some questions as we move along today, feel free to join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. And Ben Thorpe, Wisconsin, as we think about pulp, I mean, I think we're the leading pulp state in the nation, if I'm not mistaken.
Wisconsin's the leading paper-making nation state in the nation. And as such, there are a lot of opportunities. This technology that Masood was talking about is not only good for black liquor, but it's good for biomass of all forms. And one of the particular forms of biomass we're after is a thing called forest residuals, which is that part of the tree which is left in the field after logging. If there's a good use for this material, it can be collected, it can be transported. In this case, it can be gasified, and it can be turned into renewable fuel.
Okay, so there's plenty of potential in the state of Wisconsin, then, for something like this.
Enormous potential.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's pretty interesting to me. I know that you guys have a memo of understanding, is it?
Yep.
With the Department of Energy, and let's talk about that a little bit, too, because I think that relates here. What's that memo of understanding about?
Department of Energy has a program called Industrial Technology Program, and they have a number of technologies, both emerging technologies and best practices and other tools that other industries can utilize, not just the pulp and paper industry, but any energy-intensive industry. They can use it. So they were focusing on how to deploy their tools and which stage they have to choose from. And they look at different models in other states. And when they look at the focus on energy program here, that how successful we have been and the clean tech partners' deployment of emerging technologies, they decided that they want to go ahead with Wisconsin as the one state, the first state in the nation, to move forward. And that's how this memorandum of understanding was signed. By folks from the Department of Energy, Dan Ebert, the chair of the Public Service Commission, he signed it, myself, and Janet Brent from WAC.
Okay. And now what's that going to mean for us with this memo of understanding?
It opens a lot of opportunities, access to a lot of facilities and the technologies that Department of Energy has. They have also funding opportunities as well. Plus, one of the things that we see that most of the time here in the state of Wisconsin is that there are a number of barriers in implementing some of those technologies, whether it is a best practices off-the-shelf type of thing or emerging technologies, that permitting still comes up as one of the barriers. And Governor Jim Doyle has done an excellent job of working with DNR to expedite the permitting process here. But still, there are some issues that need to be dealt with to speed up the process further. But then we have to engage U.S. Department of EPA, mm-hmm. Environmental Protection Agency, Region 5, into this. And one of the things that DOE has already done is engaged EPA into these kinds of discussions. And we just had our first summit, actually, on January 30th in Milwaukee at Johnson Controls that we jointly sponsored. And DOE was able to bring EPA Region 5 folks and work together to figure this out, how we are going to do that.
That was quite an extensive day or two of conference.
It was a one-day event, actually. The weather was so cold that we were just concerned about it. It was below minus 20-something, but still we have about 60 people showed up from different industries. So that was a great success.
Let's talk, Ben, a little bit about biofuels for just a minute and why we need biofuels. Why do we need those biofuels?
Well, there was a major council put together called the Federal Energy Council, which had over 300 contacts in 19 countries. It was a rather well-done study they issued in 2000, 2007. That study showed that the world's annual increase in oil use exceeded the annual discovery rate. And that means that oil is now and will be in short supply in the future.
Yeah, we're at $100.01 on a barrel right now.
Yes, and unfortunately, that's not the end of what we're going to see. It's going to continue to increase if the world appetite for oil stays where it is now.
How much do we need?
Well, Congress looked at that, and they passed the 2007 Energy Independence and Security Act. That used to be called the Energy Policy Act. That act requires 22 billion gallons of renewable fuel by the year 2022. Excuse me, that's 36 billion gallons by the year 2022.
Wow.
That's a lot of gallons.
Yeah, and what are we at now?
Well, from corn ethanol, which is a renewable fuel, we're at about 7.5 billion gallons.
Okay,
so we've got to increase that fivefold in a little more than a decade.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to talk some more with our two guests today, Ben Thorpe and Masoud Akhtar. Masoud is president of Clean Tech Partners, located in Middleton, Wisconsin. Ben is from Richmond, Virginia, actually, but he's Clean Tech's strategic consultant in the forest products and allied industries areas, and specializing in energy and biorefineries. We'll be visiting some more with them, and certainly we'll be taking your calls and your questions here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today about biorefining and wood chemistry in the pulp and paper industry with two guests. Masoud Akhtar is president of Clean Tech Partners, located in Middleton, Wisconsin. Clean Tech Partners is a private nonprofit organization that commercializes new technologies to improve the competitiveness of Wisconsin's key industry clusters. We're really pleased to have him with us, as we are Ben Thorpe of Richmond, Virginia. He is Clean Tech's strategic consultant in the forest products and allied industries areas. He specializes in energy and biorefineries. Certainly, if you have questions for our guests, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890. And I should also mention, you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And John in Wisconsin Rapids has been waiting a little while, so let's go to John. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi.
What can we do for you?
The Domtar plant in Wisconsin Rapids here is going to close. They're going to put 500 people out of work, which is, of course, disastrous for our economy here.
Sure.
But I'm wondering if the biofuel has to be a secondary result of papermaking, or can it be a primary result? In other words, can we use the wood products just for the biofuel without the papermaking?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll ask Ben first to chime in. Ben, go ahead.
Yes, that can be done. And in the future, we're not quite ready to do this today, but we're not far away from it either. In the future, we can take these mill sites, which have played out their usefulness in making pulp or paper, and we can convert the infrastructure to one making biofuels. Probably wouldn't use the same wood. You could use a cheaper wood, but that infrastructure is valuable. The permits are valuable. The workers are valuable. And that I expect that sort of thing will happen in the future.
Masoud, comment?
Yeah, I want to go a little bit further than that. The uniqueness of an integrated forest biorefinery approach is basically you can still produce papers while you're producing these liquid transportation fuels and other things. And the reason is the technologies that we have been talking about, the technology that you can gasify a lot of these wood residues, as Ben mentioned, and you can produce the synthesis gas that could be used to convert it into steam or power, that this pulp mill becomes the source of energy or heat sink. That reduces the cost of manufacturing pulp and keep and retain these jobs. And when you are producing all of this liquid transportation fuel, that changes your economics substantially, and then now you are adding more jobs.
Hmm, interesting. But it's still a way off, ways off.
Well, I mean, we talk about some of the funding opportunities that are available now at least two mills in Wisconsin.
Okay, so
New
it's
Page and Flambeau biorefinery project.
So there you have it, John.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. Nemo and Hurley emailed us with a good question. We mentioned that there's a lot of material left in the woods after a harvest. And I don't think we called it waste material. Maybe we did. But it could be used to make biofuel. And Nemo says, well, yeah, it can be. But what's the cost to the future growth of the forest? That woody debris is important to both the forest as a future fertilizer. It's important to the soil as organic material and structure and to some extent to the wildlife, too, and frankly, in many ways. So won't the forest degrade over time without this woody debris? And, Ben, I'll turn to you first for a comment.
Well, it actually turns out that the forests are better off when you do a better job of cleaning up the residuals. The new forest grows quicker and eliminates, not eliminates, but greatly reduces the danger of fires because these raw materials now sit on the ground, they rot, they add carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, and as they decompose, they are frequently the source of fires from lightning strikes and the like.
Okay, Masood, comment?
Yeah, and I just want to broaden that a little bit, that when we talk about producing liquid transportation fuels at the mill site, the technologies that we're working with is very flexible in terms of what substrate do we use. And, you know, sometimes wood residues, sometimes some ag residues as well, sometimes sludge. And the technology is so flexible that you can gasify any material.
What is, let's talk a little bit about cellulosic ethanol, because I think that really comes into play here. And Ben, maybe you can talk about that a bit.
Well, cellulosic ethanol is ethanol that you make from plants containing cellulose. Most plants contain cellulose. Grass contains cellulose, as do trees, and most everything in between in varying amounts. There are basically two ways to convert these materials to ethanol. One way is to hydrolyze the materials, that is, put them in a strong acid or an enzyme cocktail that converts the cellulose into sugar, and then from that point it's a straight fermentation to whatever alcohol you want to produce. The other way is you can still gasify these materials. You can make a syngas, but rather than going through a process like Fischer-Tropsch, you can go through another process in which they will be made into ethanol. Range Fuels in Supperton, Georgia, is building such a plant. They're going to gasify biomass, convert it to a gas, convert that gas into methanol and ethanol.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And let's take a call from Amos in Sauk County who has a question for you guys. Amos, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I was waiting for somebody to call about that leaving stuff on the forest floor, the guy that emailed. And, you know, I'd like to hear this guy's sources. If you talk to any forestry person that isn't involved in a profit motivation, they would never say that you can take all of the residuals off a forest floor and have a healthy forest down the road. I mean, you're talking about fire. I mean, people recognize for the last 15 years that fire is essential to forest health. And, you know, you need to document a wild claim like that before you state that as fact.
Well, okay, Ben, do you have any research to back that up?
Sure. I would recommend that the caller contact U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Forestry Department, and get their views on the subject.
So they agree with you?
They have, matter of fact, one of the biggest problems they have is figuring out ways to reduce forest fires in national forests. And And they believe that doing a better job of cleaning up the forest floors is helpful in, to that end.
Hmm.
Larry?
Yeah, go ahead, Amos.
What about regeneration of the, you know, when we're talking about insect breakdown, the whole bio, the whole ecosystem of the forest? Now, you know, I mean, my brother's been a professional in this for 20 years, and he really opened my eyes to how important the biomass is to the long-term health of the forest. And I mean, you look around the world, you look at like the Amazon, places like that, where you may get productivity for a few years, but you know, and you talk about the Forest Service, the Agricultural Department, I'm talking about people that have studied this. I don't know of anybody in the professional field that isn't part of trying to get short-term benefits from the forest that wouldn't say that that's an essential part of the long-term health of the forest. It defies common sense just to start with the most basic thing.
Mm. Well, I tell you, Masood, do you want a comment from you?
Well, I would just say, you know, we're talking about in general terms. Sometimes when we talk about liquid transportation fuel at the mill site, sometimes we even don't talk about just wood residues. I mean, there's a lot of bark that comes out of this material. People can use it to gasify it. So there are a lot of options. But I think, as Ben said, you know, you have to go back and look at this USDA report. I know that Forest Service, you know, is spending about over $1 billion to put out these fires in the West Coast.
And I had some folks on from the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Project as well, and that question came up in part of a discussion there. And there may be some sort of balance that needs to be to be made in terms of how much is taken out or what is taken out from the forest in order for it to happen. And I know that's one of the I would say to Amos and Nemo and some others who may be interested in this, is one of the things that's going on in the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Project through the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison, is one of the things that they, too, are concerned about and are going to be researching, as a matter of fact, the impact of that. So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with as well from a research perspective. Thanks again for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area. Give us a call at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. And Bob in Iola, I think, is next. So let's go there. Bob, hi.
Hey, good show. I'm kind of in this business. I've been doing this for about 30 years. I sell firewood.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a couple of degrees. And these last couple of guys have hit the nail on the head that if you don't start leaving some of the biomass in the woods, you remove all the dead trees, you remove 60 species of birds that can't nest in birdhouses. They need cavities. I cut trees and I leave trees so that there's a balance. The nutrients that cycle through the forest... we can impoverish the soil of the forest greatly. Just like growing a cornfield, cut it all down. You can't fertilize a forest the way you can fertilize a cornfield.
Yeah.
So, you can take 1% or 2% on a yearly basis, but you go to a normal mechanical clear cut nowadays, and they've removed 90% of the biomass. If you remove that last 10% of the biomass, you impoverish the soil to the point where your next crop of trees grows poorly, and your next crop of trees doesn't come back. You can go to anywhere in the Middle East, places like Greece, used to have good forests, and right now it's just rock mm-hmm. and sand, and it's because we've removed everything historically. So we've got to leave things out there as long as taken. And I'd like mm-hmm. to hear your comments. This needs to be examined a lot more in the future.
Yeah, okay. Well, I thank you for calling, Bob, and I'll turn back to Ben. Ben, a comment from you?
Sure. I gave a presentation last month to the DNR Forestry Division in Chula Vista, mm-hmm. and we talked about this with foresters who are accredited in this field, and they were not concerned at all. We didn't get one question or one expression of concern about nutrients on the forest floor. We're not harvesting everything anyway. We're just harvesting the woody part of the biomass, which is left on the forest floor, and which these professionals consider a menace.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, John in Chicago's traveling through Wisconsin has a question or a comment. John, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
I just wanted to comment. I've been listening in, and I think there's a lot of, you know, I don't have all the answers, and no single person does, or we wouldn't be here, but it's an interesting debate. One of the things that I just wanted to point out is that there's no question that when you don't release nutrients back into the soil after you harvest or whatever, you know, whether you're a paid forester for a company that makes paper or an environmentalist or whatever, this is all an environmental issue, really. Some people don't want to even accept any role in the environment. They want to think biofuels, some of them, that is going to save all of our energy problems, and it's not. The amount of material that we would have from forests, from cellulose, to make up that 24 billion gallons deficit in 10 years, it would be tremendous. And you wouldn't have much left in the way of ecosystems, environment. There would be a lot of breakdowns going on if you tried to harvest that much material. Ethanol and biofuels, it's a nice concept. It's going to help with the energy situation and environmental situation. And the reason it's environmental is it's all based on carbon. Based on bacteria, algae, nutrients. When you take that away, the whole food chain breaks down. Like the guy said, he talked about birds. Well, that's further up. But you just can't say that you're going to be able to harvest wood, rake the forest floor clean, and be able to produce 25 billion gallons of fuel a year.
Yeah, I doubt very much that was what you had in mind, Masood.
Yeah, I think I just wanted to clarify a couple things in here, that when we talk about wood residues, that's not the only source that we are talking about here. We have a very significant project at Cleantech Partners with 13 different members called as Value Prior to Pulping. What we are doing basically, the paper mills have all the infrastructure in place of wood handling and everything. We are treating those wood chips with a chemical and taking out the hemicellulose from the wood chips and converting it into sugar. Now, the extractor chips, when you go through a pulping process, it is showing some benefits of reducing energy saving there in the pulping process and improving the quality of papers. So here you're talking about the wood that is already going into the pulping process, and they're not taking the advantage of hemicellulose that is in the wood. So there are different ways to look at it. As I mentioned earlier, you know, you can take the sludge and other types of bark and things that are out there. So it's an open field right now, and whenever industry decides to move forward, they have to look into that specific situation where they're at.
Yeah, so in your case, you're talking about the wood that's already there. Yeah. And obviously when it's processed, there's leftover from that. And that's what that one company is working on, yeah. Or it's probably several companies, actually. All right, let's go to Al in Stoughton then. Al, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes, I echo the concerns of the people that suggest we need to proceed with caution and balance. And I would suggest also a diversity of alternative energy sources. But my question is, given the possibility that we will rely on energy resources that we have to grow or that have to be perhaps vulnerable to bad years in terms of weather events or whatever, doesn't that make it even more important that we conserve the petroleum resources so that they can provide a means of evening out and assuring we have a constant supply of energy?
It's a good question. Ben, you want to take a crack at that?
Well, sure, absolutely. There's no question about it. These biofuels will never even come close to replacing all the petroleum we need. The world is going to be in a shortage of both of those, and we have food considerations to add to the equation as well. So, yes, there has to be a balanced approach to all of this. We have to decide what our priorities are and proceed along those lines. The crisis and saving energy of all kinds is certainly got to be a top priority. We need more fuel-efficient factories, we need more fuel-efficient cars, and we need more fuel-efficient practices in the home and the office.
Yeah, absolutely. Masood's shaking his head yes in agreement with that. David, thank you for calling, Al. David and Hurley, your turn. Hi, David.
Yes. One thing I think they should be done is the rooftops of all these buildings, if they start having green rooftops, we could grow a lot of stuff on the top of the roofs in the cities, and then they could use that to make biofuels. And then also there's a refrigerator that Einstein invented that requires a heat source. So why don't we take the heat from the sun, you know, solar collector or whatever, and use that to air condition buildings? I don't know if someone ever maybe see if it's possible to adapt that to air conditioning of buildings.
Masood?
Well, I'm sure somebody must be listening to this.
I wonder about, Ben, maybe you have a comment.
Well, one of the costs, reason the forest floors aren't cleaned up now, cleaned up better than they are now, is because there's a cost in doing that. And one of the big costs of this material that's left on the floor now is the harvesting costs. So, yes, we should grow material anywhere that we can grow it that's done in a way that's consistent with good environmental practices and harvest it. I'm afraid if you started to grow it on rooftops, the harvest costs would not be very sustainable.
There are other good things about growing things on rooftops, though, in terms of cleaner air, in terms of energy savings, or maybe energy efficiency. If you've got something like that up on your roof, it's got to be a great insulator.
Oh, it's excellent for insulation value, and it's excellent if it's growing. It'll take carbon out of the atmosphere, and those are two good reasons right there to do it.
Yeah.
The only thing is going to be, well, they will supply enough material to a pulp mill if they're thinking about processing 500 tons of material a day.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Where the concern is going to be.
That's definitely right. And let's see if we got time. Mike in Langlade County, it's hold on a second here. Let me get you. It's your turn, Mike. Hi, thank you for calling.
And thank you. I would suggest if you, instead of simply concentrating on slash that's in the woods after a logging project, we have tons and tons of aspen in the National Forest and State Forest in Wisconsin. That's the only tree that regenerates itself. No fertilizer, no herbicides, no pesticides. The return could be as much as 5 or 6 or 7 to 1 instead of 1.3 to 1 like for ethanol from corn. And aspen, when you cut it down, has notes along the root system, each one of which springs up into a new tree, sometimes as thick as 18,000 stems to the acre, and sometimes 2 or 3 acres of aspen trees actually amounts to only one plant. The problem is the Sierra Club, because they have stopped logging on the National Forest, has come to a halt, and everybody's crying about the junk that comes over here from Europe in the hulls, in the ballast water of ships, but the dock at Duluth is 200 or 300 acres of pallets stacked 3 times as high as your head, all covered with material that says what? Softwoods from Europe. That's pine, fir, and spruce. When we're sitting on millions, literally, they have 1.5 million acres of national forest in the state of Wisconsin alone that is covered with pine, spruce, and fir, and yet we're importing it from Europe and trashing our lake in the process. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Ben, you want to make a comment on that?
No, that's an excellent comment. And we can also use material, varieties of trees and shrubs and plants that are not used now and in a harvest, typically, unfortunately, in some cases, the whole tree gets left behind because it has no commercial value.
I want to, since we're right at the end here, Masood, do you have a website that people can go to find out some more about your clean tech?
Yeah, cleantechpartners.org.
Oh, cleantechpartners.org. You can find out some more about what Clean Tech Partners is working on. And I want to thank Masood Akhtar and Ben Thorpe for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being with us. And thank you for listening. This is a topic we'll bring up again. I can assure you of that. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.